This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. This is a renterswarehouse.com roadshow. Live from Carbach Brewing, this is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5. Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Thursday on The Usual Suspects. Hope everybody's having a good time. We certainly are. We are at Carbach Brewing, and if you have not been here, you need to be. Here as soon as possible, because obviously, as the name states, the beer is unbelievable, but so is the food, the atmosphere, the environment, the indoor-outdoor option. It is great. And with all that being said, Nick is here in the studio. I am here at Carbach, and we're going to call this one today the Dog and Cody Show, because instead of Barry Laminack, who's in Portland, I'll be the dog. He can be Cody. Cody Stutes making his first appearance as a co-host on The Usual Suspects. After a long and celebrated run at a less-than-stellar radio station, he has now joined the real world at a real station, and we're happy as hell to have him. And by the way, based on Twitter last night when you started putting this out there, your following is unbelievable. I expect this to be standing room only in the next hour.
Standing room only, huh? Well, don't get your hopes too high. Okay. I'm ready to disappoint.
I can tell you that they were at the shoe top level to start with, so there's just not a – the roof is the ceiling, but the ceiling won't be touched.
Okay, gotcha, sure. Okay. Sounds like a plan.
And I noticed that your love of Magnum P.I. is somewhat there. You wore the style of shirt, you just didn't have as many palm trees on it as you did the last time in studio.
I almost wore a new Hawaiian shirt that I have acquired just for you.
Why wouldn't you?
But I figure I'll save it for tomorrow maybe.
Because you were going to wear it both days, and then the pit stink would have been like too much for the people to handle here at Carbach?
No. I carry deodorant with me in the truck. I never smell bad.
Okay, that's a whole other story.
I never smell bad.
That just means that there's more sweating going on than we need to talk
about. For a while,
about.
My AC didn't work in my truck, so I had to carry deodorant everywhere. But now I'm squared away. I'm good to go.
Okay.
I mean, there's maybe a little coolant leak that shoots coolant into the cab of the truck, and maybe I smell like coolant sometimes, but I'm good. I'm good today.
I'll tell you what, better than the other options. Better than the alternatives. If you just smell like coolant, that might be the refreshing answer to smelling like something else you don't want to smell like.
Smell like an O'Reilly Auto Parts, you know, or something like that.
Nick, you good back there?
Doing great, man. Actually just got my welcome to
really
the land.
You sounded really excited.
That's my tone. I can't help that. But, yeah, I'm doing good. I just got my pullover, my Welcome to the Land pullover from Barry's website. So I'm pumped about that.
Congratulations to you. Are you going to be putting pictures on Twitter so we can all see it?
Sure. I'll help promote Barry's deal. Sure.
I would expect nothing less.
Is that a Usual Suspects thing or is that a Barry
thing?
That's
a Barry
thing. It's a Barry thing.
Oh, so he's not wetting the beak on that?
No, come on.
You and Nick got to get a little taste.
Nick, you got to.
You had to buy it, Nick?
You got to break Cody into the fact that this Barry's all about Barry.
Oh, my goodness.
He doesn't like us that much. He's not going to give us free pullovers and T-shirts.
Nick might. I'm not getting any of
that. I used to do the old T-shirt hustle game for a while as a little side gig.
Yeah.
And you gotta wet the beak, some free tees, you know, stuff like that. I can't believe Barry's making you guys pay for it. Well, you're not going to buy one.
No.
I'm not either.
I'm not. But at the same time, the T-shirt game, and then Barry gets competition. Barry does the T-shirt thing, and the listeners are all over it, and everybody's buying the T-shirt. It's going really well. And then you get some ass clown that shows up at the listener appreciation party, should be happy to be there, and starts telling Barry, I'm copying your shirt, and I'm doing three for the same price as one, and everything like that. And we were like, what?
That's awesome.
Nick took him out front, took care of him. It was fine.
Appreciate the grind on that.
Yeah, he didn't care.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad.
Oh, man.
So, Nick, you covered Rockets last night. I had the other side covered, which I doubt we'll talk about. Very disappointing from Toyota Center last night. For those of you that missed it, and as I said on Twitter, understandable if you did, but you didn't miss much.
Nah, I mean, it's you can't sugarcoat it. I mean, it's too early to judge, but it's still a terrible start to the season. I know it's the Pelicans. I don't think anybody saw, like, an absolute beatdown from the Pelicans on the home opener at Toyota Center. But now they're going to be on the road. They're going to face the Lakers. Hopefully it's just a situation like D'Antoni was talking about. He kind of blamed it on fatigue, but I kind of think that's what the training camp and preseason is for.
We'll get into this, and we'll get into talking about Rockets, but how the hell can you be fatigued?
I don't get it either.
You haven't played a real game yet.
You played the Shanghai Sharks in preseason. That's how you're fatigued.
But still, if you're going through, even if you don't do two-a-days, you're going through camp, you don't have any, you know, grinded out injuries from the beating you're taking in real games. And New Orleans should not be a team that you should be worried about more tempo than you.
You know how you get fatigued? Because you show up and you're puffy, like 13 was last night.
The last time 13 showed up puffy for a regular season start was the year of the Kardashians.
Yes. Well, yes. I mean, is the MVP celebration tour still going?
Dude, hey, it was his bobblehead last night. Dude, so he probably was the last little lapse of last year.
He showed up like a muscle and fitness cover model last year, and this year he looks like he's been hanging out at Carbach for like 6 months.
Well, did you see him walk in the gym? He had a muumuu on. He basically had your Hawaiian shirt in a robe. I mean, he had the worst kind of outfit on it, and it was like, is this a sign of things to come?
Hey, I've lived that muumuu life for a weekend or two every now and then.
Yeah.
It's pretty comfortable.
Or without undergarment?
I mean, I was all by myself for the weekend, so without, I mean, why would
I
wear?
Wow, free at last.
Yeah,
I don't know if I can thank God if those are free at last, but hey, whatever you're going to do, you're going to do. I don't think that I've ever had the need to do that on a weekend, but, more power to you. So
just brush the crumbs off of yourself.
As you brush down, you realize where they're going if you're...
No, they don't end up there. No.
Okay, I'm just saying. You know, you might misconstrue which are crumbs, and then you've got all kinds of table manner issues. So we're just getting started at Carbach. We're going to talk about that Astros game, and I'm sure you guys want to do it too because it is put the Astros in quite the predicament. There is a hole to dig out of. A lot of people, I'm interested to get your vibe, as well as you two guys, but to figure out where you guys are at. I mean, is you guys still believing? Is this the team that's going to do it and win three straight against the team with the best record in baseball in the regular season? Stop blaming that call for being the end-all, be-all for why they lost the game last night. Because I got a laundry list, and we're going to get to it. And that laundry list ain't pretty, and it ain't a lot of things that are supposed to be happening in playoff baseball.
It's so brutal to have people point to that moment and say, oh, well, the Astros lost because of that. No, that's not why the Astros lost. And you know what? Even if you added those runs in, the Astros didn't play well enough to win the baseball game last night. Like, that's the fact of the matter. They didn't pitch well enough. They didn't come up with key hits. They didn't play well enough to win the baseball game last night.
Absolutely right. And you know what? Like I said, I put a whole list together, and every time I thought I had all of them on a list, I would find something else that I had to tack on. I mean, base running errors, as you mentioned, pitching deficiencies in the fact that the thing that really bothers me is you got a kid that's throwing 102 miles an hour, a kid that is absolutely in Josh James. He is dusting the ball by anyone and everyone that comes up to the plate. And the first thing he's doing on almost every hitter is sending a message of, you're not going to touch this.
Right.
So to Jackie Bradley Jr., he throws a changeup. Why?
Jackie freaking Bradley Jr. is the reason the Red Sox are, you know, winning this series. He's been amazing. Blow it by that dude. Like, you don't have to give him anything to hit. Like, blow it by him.
Forget LBJ. It's now JBJ in Houston.
Gosh.
Because Jackie Bradley Jr. is taking over the world one home run at a time. Mookie Betts, aside from that play that everyone's talking about, made one hell of a play in right field
and continues
to show why he's the American League MVP. And then the other outfielder that we're not talking about, we talk about on the last play of the game, who makes a gutsy, ballsy catch. Where if that ball gets by him, you lose the game. But because he goes all out, he wins the game for the Boston Red Sox.
That was, I mean, as soon as Bregman started to swing and I saw kind of where that ball was coming, I was like, oh, here we go. Like, Bregman's got something. And you see the ball go off Bregman's bat and you're like, Bregman's got something. And then you see it land in Benintendi's glove and you're still thinking to yourself because it hasn't processed yet, Bregman's got something. Oh, my God, he caught that. And you just, like, hey, tip your cap to that guy. Like, the dude made a great play. like, yeah, that's an awesome play. It's still, like, it was a heart ripper. Because,
no doubt about
it. The bases are loaded. Bregman's up. Like, you want to talk about Mookie Betts as the AL MVP. Like, a guy that challenged him for a good portion of the season's up with the bases juiced, and you're down, and you're like, okay, Cinderella. Like, this is what every kid pretends to do in their front yard. And, you know, Bregman's up there, takes the hack, and then what the weird kid down the street pretended to do was, you know, catch your ball in the front yard. And that's what Benintendi actually did. No one dreams to be Benintendi in that moment. They dream to be Alex Bregman. And Benintendi on the other end of, like, spectacular front yard, think it, and then it makes it happen at the biggest
stage.
And
here's the thing, too, for all the Devil's Advocate Houston fans, which, again, the day after, you know, you can't figure out where you should point and spray your venom the most. But don't point it at Alex Bregman for swinging at the first pitch. That is exactly what he lives on. A high pitch, high in the zone, sitting right where he wants it in his wheelhouse. I don't blame him for a second for going after the first pitch.
And I know the bases are loaded, but Kimbrel's not going to give him much more stuff.
Kimbrel was struggling, but at the same time, he's a professional closer. He's going to barrel.
He's not going to give him much more stuff that's going to be better to hit than that pitch. So, like, I was a little. My first thought was, man, first pitch swinging. I don't know. Like, the Kimbrel's been struggling, but a walk in that situation, like, that puts one across, and that brings up, George Springer. So, like,
right. Yeah,
you bring, but that gives Kimbrel a whole new count, and he would have gone at Bregman. Like, just enough, played around with it. I mean, Kimbrel, that was the best pitch Bregman was going to get to hit.
And here's the
and
thing.
He took advantage of it.
Of all the obvious Devil's Advocate moves by Astro fan today, the other one that's bothering me is, why did you put Bregman in the leadoff spot when it's been Springer's all year long, and Springer in that position would have been better because he's hotter? No, you don't. You needed to get Bregman some pitches
and
let him see some pitches so AJ moves him up in the lineup. I don't want to hear any of this about Springer would have done better. And all this, again, that Bregman swung at the first pitch stuff. You guys can table it now. Don't call in with it. I don't want to see any more of it because you're wrong. It's just as simple as I can be.
I agree with you on that. It felt like a smart and an almost necessary move to do that to Bregman, because the other guys in the lineup, like Carlos Correa previous to last night, was not that, you know, heavy hitter, that guy that was successful at the plate. You had to get someone. And Yuli Gurriel, my goodness. He looks lost at the plate at times.
Shocking, right?
Popping stuff up nonstop last night. And you had to get somebody who's going to hit with some consistency behind Bregman, so they have to throw to him. And you just – I love that move. It didn't pay off right there, but you know, that's something that was very close to paying off because Bregman came up in that big spot.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we're just getting started. That means fasten your seatbelts and away we go. We appreciate you taking us along for the ride. It is the Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5. Therefore, if you want to reach the show, 713-780-3776, where you can call, you can text, you can hit us on Twitter as well, where it's at @Cody_Stutes, at @PacManJoel with a K, and at @TheProducerNick. And a special shout-out to Shiloh Bell. We'll wish him a happy birthday on the way out because we appreciate him being here as well. Shiloh, happy birthday. You guys, thanks for coming along for the ride. And we're at Carbach Brewing, so why not stop by and come inside? We'll be back with more. It's ESPN 97.5.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Carbach Brewing. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
I firmly believe in our team. This series isn't over. Again, what do you expect me to say, right? I mean, I'm gonna back my boys. We're a really good team, and this has been a really, you know, really tough series. Obviously, we haven't won the last couple nights, but I like our team's chances tomorrow. JV on the mound, the lineup, the bats that we put up tonight, we'll post just fine.
That was your manager, A.J. Hinch, following the heartbreaking defeat last night at Minute Maid Park between the Astros and the Red Sox, with Boston taking the commanding 3-1 lead. We don't know if it's commanding or not. You know, you got Verlander tonight. You got Gerrit Cole for the next one against Chris Sale, who is trying to get better. But going to be a tall hill to climb, since you're playing the team with the best record in baseball in the regular season, and they're proving why everybody said don't sleep on the Red Sox. Don't think it's a huge surprise if they win the series. Don't be surprised if, you know, they do everything they're supposed to do and more, because they're a really good team.
Yeah, I mean, the Astros are fantastic this year. And if you're looking at this team without the injuries throughout the regular season, I mean, they're challenging Boston for that best record in Major League Baseball. They weren't that far off with all the injuries. That's something that's really tough, and I don't think anybody's really talked about enough. Like, Altuve's knee is clearly, just a huge issue for him. I mean, you saw him take the time at second base after he legged that one out, and then he was way slower getting home than he usually is. It looked like Springer almost got dinged up a little bit yesterday with just the slide. And then late in the game, he had that swing, and it looked like he tweaked his
back. It almost looked like he did the thumb again on a couple different occasions.
Yeah, so you got Springer that's a little banged up. Correa looks closer to himself than he's looked in, you know, months with last night's game. I don't know if that was maybe just an adrenaline game where he's feeling good. I bet he's feeling it today. And then you got some of these other, like Charlie Morton didn't finish the season healthy, hadn't pitched in a while. He has the rough start to things last night, which forces Hinch to go to Josh James. But look, Verlander today, and then you got to look at what the Red Sox are doing right now. Like, they're going to run Price out there.
He warmed up pretty hard last night.
Yeah, he warmed up real hard last night. They're going to run Price out there, and then you mentioned the Sale thing. Like, sickly Chris Sale's going to pitch game six against Garrett Cole. Okay, I feel pretty good about that. And by the way, if Price goes out there and wets the mound, you're going to talk about a bullpen that is exhausted.
I was thinking that on the way here, too. You think about how good the Red Sox bullpen was last night, but how depleted it might be tonight. And I've heard people say, well, they may go bullpen by committee tonight simply because Price warmed up so long. Well, good luck with that, because a lot of their best relievers got a lot of wear and tear on their arm last night, which is, again, advantage Astros. But when you look at it, and we're going to break it down, and we've got audio galore from this, and we'll get to the play because by now everybody's exhausted the play in right field. But when you look at what happened with the Astros last night, and I've been one of those people that have been harping on these injuries, Cody, but what I've been saying is, more so than anything else, you obviously know it's going to affect this team for the rest of the season. I'm concerned about going forward to make sure that Springer's thumb is going to be okay and he doesn't need surgery, to make sure that whatever is happening with Correa's back isn't going to linger into next year and beyond, especially when he's hunting for that big contract. When you look at what's going on with Altuve's knee, is he going to need surgery? And if so, how extensive is it going to be? How quick is the turnaround in terms of his recovery? So those are things to be thought about for the long term. For the short term, you're right. I don't think, and especially because of the two incidences you bring up with his running, I don't think he's going to play second base tonight.
No.
I don't. AJ, before the game, thought he would. I think based on what we saw last night and the way Marwin played a good second base.
Whoa, that play early.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just saying, I don't think you change that portion of what you're doing with this team. But I think overall, for a team that is so disciplined, for, you know, a well-coached, always follows everything, you know, by the book, execution-wise and everything else, I can go up and down the list of things that just really caught my ire last night. You know, I look at the Correa double play ball. I mean, that's something you got to have. You just got to have it. And to miss the base in that case and then find out that caused the inning to go on, which really nipped you in the butt, that's a problem.
That was a terrible moment for Ryan Pressly, and then it turned into a terrible moment for Lance McCullers, because Pressly made the perfect pitch. He made the pitch he's supposed to make there. You get the ground ball, and when Correa got near second, I was like, oh, I don't know if he touched it. He throws it to first, and the umpire right away is signaling safe, and you're like, oh my goodness, like the tailor-made double play ball.
Yep.
And it looked like he hesitated just a second, like he didn't know if he wanted to throw it or take it himself. The tailor-made double play ball, you don't seal it. That cost you one run for sure. And then you look at some of the other things throughout the game. I mean, does Tony Kemp trying to stretch that single into a double, does that cost you a run?
I am livid by myself in the house. Thank God I'm in the man cave and no one can hear me, because I'm going, that is going to bite them in the rear end. And it didn't take long, because they continued to put together an inning after that subsequently. And you're like, if you only had Tony Kemp on first base, he would already been home with a run.
Oh, for sure.
And you'd have been fine. You mentioned one that we'll go back and forth. The one that I really was bothered by, too, was, don't blame Pressly, although he had a couple of walks, for making a good pitch and getting caught by a double play ball that wasn't executed.
Sure.
But the fact of the matter is, right after that, you take Pressly out, who's been your most reliable reliever, who doesn't walk guys, and you bring in Lance McCullers, who proceeds to walk a guy and walk a run in, and that hurts you as well.
The whole night, I didn't love – I mean, I love going to James early, because that was, you know – I mean, he was nails for a couple of innings. Got a
two
little
plus.
You know, got that – gave up a run and then gave up the Bradley home run. But I didn't love the management after that. Like, when James gave up the double that went out of Springer's glove, that's another one.
That's a heartbreaker. That's one that's not going to be anybody's blame, but that's one that 9 times out of 10, George Springer makes that
play.
Sure,
sure. Like, that one goes out of Springer's glove. I thought at that moment it's like, okay, let's get McHugh in there, or then that's the moment for Presley. But to go to McCullers, who is about chase stuff, like swing and miss at my stuff, and has some issues with walks. I didn't love that decision right there.
And wild pitches.
And, of course, he walks in the run. And then the next inning, you know, when McCann's in there, he's got that one. You can point to the ball past Maldonado early. That's a run.
Yep.
The ball past McCann. And I'm not going to call it pass ball, wild pitch, whatever, because on the replays, every time it looks like they can get it. So, I don't know if it's the pitcher's fault they got crossed up or if it's the catcher's fault. But there's two runs right there. Like, you know, Maldonado and McCann each let one get by them. Each of them ended up with a run because the runners moved up and were able to score on the next hit.
Yeah, and you get to Josh James, which I love this kid. I think I personally think Keuchel's moving on, regardless, because he wants too much money, and I think they have too many good starting pitchers that I'm fine if he does move on. But I'm fine with it in part because of the fact that sure, you're going to get a McCullers back, and sure, you're going to talk to Charlie Morton about bringing him back. You have Colin McHugh that's been a starter in Peacock, but boy, this kid is the kid that I think is the reason why you can do whatever you want to let Keuchel walk, because he came in throwing at 102. Ridiculous. For over two innings, he was dominant to the point of they weren't coming close, flailing and missing. And in a lot of cases, we're watching him just steam by them. So Jackie Bradley comes up, and a guy that has struggled with fastballs, but knows, you know, he's even if he's a dead red fastball hitter, you know 102 miles an hour in this kind of environment at home is going to be something that's going to be really tough to hit. Instead, because once you throw it, now you've got him on his heels. Now you've got him off balance. Now you've got him guessing. And then when you throw the changeup, now he's on his front foot. He's not going to hurt you. Right. Instead, first pitch changeup, 91 miles an hour, and Jackie Bradley put it with a stewardess airborne on its way to a destination unknown. It just chapped me because he was pitching so well, but that's what you're going to remember, and that's what people aren't looking at enough. Throw the gas until they prove they can hit it.
And that's what's really frustrating about that is he'd worked like a really nice inning up to that point. You get the strikeout swinging, you get Brock Holt to ground out, the double goes off of Springer's glove, but you're thinking, okay, you know, they're not going to hurt me because I'm going to get Jackie Bradley here. And then the guy that just, like, how do you throw him anything that's home run type pitches? Like how do you throw him anything that he can go yard on when the night before he had just eliminated you and eliminated a baseball? Like, that was really tough. And I don't know if that's a pregame, you know, Strom strategy thing. I don't know if that's a Maldonado in the moment makes that call thing. I don't know if that's James getting to that pitch because he thinks that's a good pitch. Like, I don't know who made that mistake.
I mean, you could see it. AJ's making his calls into Maldonado, and they're calling the pitches because he's obviously a young kid. He's inexperienced in this situation. But, yeah, I don't get that call. Yeah.
Blow it by him. That was the thing I always was frustrated with Giles. It's like, dude, you throw it 100 miles an hour. Throw the fastball. Like throw some gas past somebody. That's what I wanted James to do in that situation. He didn't, obviously. But then you had opportunities after that. Like, it's not like it was the – you know, not like they busted it wide open. They took a one-run lead with that, you know?
Yeah. So we'll continue to talk about it. And you guys have several different avenues that you can talk about it as well. We're on location at Carbach Brewing, so we'll take calls, but those are a little tougher, but we'll do it for you because that's why we're here for you. You're here for us. That's what we appreciate about the suspects. 713-780-3776. That's the HRNP listener line. You can call that number, you can text that number, or you can hit us up on Twitter. Back with more, including, I fear, but I know we have to do it, the talk about what everyone is talking about and blaming on the loss last night in that game at Minute Maid Park. Back with more. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is Kareem Jackson, and you listen to ESPN 97.5.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Carbach Brewing. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Altuve, right field, back there. Bats at the track. He leaps, and it is out. And maybe calling it interference. I'm trying to get a read on the right field umpire here.
It looked like he was going to catch it, and he gets stopped from catching it from the hand of the fan.
And out is the call.
I saw fan interference. I've had this a couple times, or we have as a team. And they deemed the fan reached over into the field of play and interfered with Betts.
So there you go with the play-by-play call via ESPN Radio, followed by Hinch's comments as he started what would have been a few answers on the topic last night, in which he totally gave full credit at all times to Mookie Betts for being extremely athletic, for getting high above the wall. But then you start with the whole Wallgate controversy, because now people are going to say, you know, was he over the wall? Was his arm in the stands? The rule clearly states that if the player is going into the stands to try and make the play, that then all bets are off. There's a lot of back and forth going on this. There's a lot of opinions, obviously. The thing that I pointed out to people right from the get-go was the call on the field by Joe West was fan interference and an out. I also want to probably tell you that I was listening to the local feed a little bit too as well, kind of catching back up, and I was at the game, and they had the local feed going, and I was like, they're calling it a double. They're saying, oh, fans touched it, so it's a double. It'll be second, third, and I'm going, the one possible outcome that I don't see or think is possible is an ex-major leaguer and Robert Ford talking about, yeah, it's going to be. No, it's not.
It's not going to be a double.
No, it definitely wasn't a double, but it definitely was the topic that everybody wanted to discuss the rest of the evening. You and I have already touched on all the other things that made sure that people are aware. That's not the play that decided the game. And honestly, if you take your fandemonium of the Astros out of it, when you look at it as a rational fan of baseball or just a rational viewer, he has a legitimate chance to make that play. There's no doubt about it. But it becomes the technicalities of the rule to state, is it like the goal line in football where once you break the plane, then all bets are off? Or if the fans are reaching over the stands like AJ was talking about, that I get. But there, and Charlie talked about it during his show. There's no clear-cut angle where you can make a determination on if the fans were over the railing at all, because there's a couple guys that look like they're close. They're on the borderline. And then what happened with his glove when it got up into the stands. And more so than anything else, for everybody that's clamoring for that camera angle, oh, by the way, security guy, get the hell out of the way, and we might have an angle that could show us definitively if they were over the railing or not.
Is that security guy working, like, section 700 and something tonight or what?
Yeah, definitely, except for that fro, that do.
Everyone's going to know exactly who that is.
You might miss half the big screen this time, because that do he had going, he was working some major quaff.
Yeah, he did.
So that's
the most important thing about when it got to replay and either, you know, call stands or calls overturned, is that's the angle you need. That angle's not there because the security guard leans in front of the TV camera, which is what the MLB people use, which is fascinating to me that they use the TV angles. Like, there's not some sort of feed or angles somewhere else.
Or extra cameras
that they...
Pylon camera would be great on the foul pole,
there's,
I might add.
There's extra umpires. We can't get extra cameramen somewhere else. We can't get extra cameras elsewhere. Like, you got to rely on the TV feeds, like security guard. And
maybe you just don't need it. Maybe you need unmanned cameras. Or like in football, the one thing I was thinking about, the Skycam. There's ways to just set up like Skycam on the foul poles, so therefore you don't have to pay the extra cameraman and worry about the extra expense, but you get the camera angles you need. Because from above, you probably could see that as well and make that determination.
Exactly. The thing that has bothered me most about this is the small thing and the big thing. The small thing is, I don't care if Mookie Betts was going to catch the baseball or not. Like, that's what Darling was saying at first on the TV broadcast, was like, oh, well, Mookie was going to catch it, it's got to be an out. Like, that doesn't matter. Like, and first of all, he was not going to catch it and hang on as high as he was.
Well, that's
and where
the thing.
He
you
was.
Take so many variables you can't have answers for. Yeah. Does it snow cone out?
Yeah. The big thing about this is I don't know how that 327 and a half pounds of Joe West, that flubbery, blobby mess that is the head crew chief of this umpiring crew, I don't know how he waddles out there, turns his big old turkey neck, and sees the fan interference. Like, I don't understand how, from where he stands during the game, he could turn around and definitively see that fan interfered. Like, I understand how you could guess that, but definitively see, because the thing that matters most is Joe West calls this fan interference and calls him out, and then there's no camera angle to disprove him. Because if Joe West calls...
Inconclusive, and you got to go with the call on the field.
You got to go on the field. And then after the thing, Joe West says, oh, well, they told me that my call stands. And then he says, well, then they told me there wasn't enough evidence to overturn it. Like, okay, so like they thought that there was a chance that was a home run. That should have been a home run call on the field. That should have been a home run call on the field. Joe West blew it from right field, and because he blew it from right field, it has to stand. So, like, I understand.
Here's the thing, too, because I've said on this show previously, Joe West is to baseball what Joey Crawford was to basketball. They are bigger than the game. They want to be the attention whores that get everybody looking at them. Think about the throw to second base earlier in the series, and he just sits there and lets it hit him in the shoulder, and you're like, come on, Joe, get your fat ass out of the way.
I really wonder how many other umpires, and even umpires on that crew, I really wonder how many of them would have called it a home run, because that's the one that gets you the least amount of criticism.
Audio from our boy Jeff Blum that I want to get to, but the other thing I was going to make the point on to your point before we get to that, which is Joe West not only made the call, but he, like Alex Cora, who is in the visiting team dugout a mile away from this play, are making a signal like a referee in football to say that his wrist and his forearm were hit. No, they weren't. And Joe West, when he makes the call on the field, keeps going like this.
Yes.
It was the glove that was affected. There was no touch on the forearm. So the fact that you're out of touch with what you're calling because you're saying something that didn't happen bothered me greatly. But here's Jeff Blum's audio on everything about Joe West.
You know, there were a couple of things in reading the articles and watching some of the replays. One article had Mookie Betts who said, as I jumped and went over, so that tells me that Mookie even admitted that he was over the wall. Not that you can do this in the middle of the game. And then, you know, Joe West said to the pool reporter, I got the call right, which he is wrong. And he said that the replay review said that he got the call right, which is another wrong statement. They came back and said the call in the field stands. That means they had nothing to overturn the idiotic call of an out. So my question is, if Joe West rules that a home run, there might not be enough evidence to say that it wasn't a home run. So Joe West initially, I think, got the call wrong. And then Major League Baseball, focusing on 9,000 cameras in Spygate, wrongfully doesn't have enough cameras to get the right call on the field. So the whole thing is frustrating, and I really feel, I mean, I hate to pick on Joe West, but I think the game is passing by.
No question. There's no question about it. I mean, it's strong comments from Jeff Blum on the mighty 1090 in San Diego this morning where he played. And he was gracious enough to get up, I think, at like 6:30 our time to do that interview. But, you know, a lot of, you know, Blummer's a friend of the show. A lot of great stuff in that commentary from Jeff Blum.
With Blum pointing out that it's Joe West, I want to point out that earlier in the series, remember the foul tip?
Yep.
Remember the foul that, you know, I think it was Marwin was at the plate, and they went to the replay, yep. And the announcer's like, you can't review this. This is not a reviewable play. You can't review this. And then after the game, we hear that it's a rules clarification. Like, Joel, you talk about what Joe West was signaling. Like, there's a great chance Joe West doesn't know the rules. Like, there's a really great chance that he doesn't know
The replay that wasn't supposed to be allowed to be replayed was because he was checking to get clarification on a rule.
Right. That was Major League Baseball's story was, oh, he had to get clarification on a rule. He had to get clarification on a foul tip at the plate? Are you serious? He was behind the plate, and he's a regular behind the plate umpire. He had to get clarification.
Wait,
he's a crew chief.
You're supposed to know the rules.
So there's a great chance that Joe West sees Betts get anywhere near the fans, and doesn't know that the rule states once you pass the yellow line, whatever contact you make with the fans, that's on you. You take it into your own hands, passing the line, going into where the fans are. And so if they made contact with Mookie Betts and he was beyond the yellow line when they made contact with him, like, that's totally legal. Now, if they were, you know, above the yellow line making contact with him, you know, we don't know because we don't have the camera angle. There's a great chance that Joe West had no idea what the correct rule book call was in that situation.
It's obviously a play that's going to go down in infamy in Houston sports history.
We're going to talk about it for 10 years.
Just like the Oilers call in the corner of the end zone with the Steelers,
yep.
And all the different things that we're going to remember in the lore and annals, sorry, Drew, of sports in the Houston area. you know that this one's not going away, as is the Benintendi catch. That's always going to be brought up as well. And so we want to bring it up with you. If you guys want to join the show, 713-780-3776, where you can call or you can text or you can, of course, hit us on Twitter. We're the Usual Suspects with my good friend Cody Stutes filling in for Barry Lamadak right here at Carbach Brewing. Stop in and see us. We'll be back with more on ESPN 97.5.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Carbach Brewing. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Lamanac with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It's The Usual Suspects on a Thursday from Carbach Brewing, 2032 Carbach Street. It's the 290 and 610 area. Got a great group of beautiful people hanging out at Carbach. You should be here, too. It is a fantastic establishment. This place is top-notch in terms of the inside-outside options, the unbelievable food to go with the tasty beverages. You should stop in and see us. We'll be here till 4. Blitz will be here till 7. And, oh, by the way, the guy that basically stole Patrick Mahomes' voice, but nothing else,
I don't know,
is filling in for Barry Lamanac.
I don't know.
Cody Stutes has gotten out of the loop and off of 290, where he belongs on 97.5, as he's filling in for the first time, although he does make his regular guest appearances on our show weekly,
sure,
which will be part of your day two experience tomorrow. So we don't need to do your appearance because you're going to be here again tomorrow when
perfect,
we broadcast from Prime Social. So
perfect,
it's great. Good to have you along, my friend.
It's good to be here. I don't know that I'm quite as froggy as Mahomes is. Like he gets just a little bit deeper into the froggy.
You sound pretty similar, though. Here's what Mahomes sounds like.
Say,
I mean, everybody's still
back
in great
the next
spirits,
segment,
we know there's a lot of seasons left, and you know that there's going to be ups and downs. But we've talked about this whole entire season. I mean,
Cody, start talking.
We talked about this whole entire season. Ooh, it's pretty close.
See? It really is.
It's pretty close.
It really is. I think you may bring a little bit more behind it, but I think that if we come back from next segment and you go, hi-ho, Cody Stutes here, I think that we could have a combination between Kermit the Frog, Pat Mahomes, and you. It'd be fantastic.
Oh, man. And Pat and I both went to Texas Tech, and, you know.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Nick, they were separated at birth.
Yeah.
Who knew? We should just do a split screen on Twitter. It should be Patrick Mahomes, Cody Stutes. You can't tell the difference. These two guys are look-alike, sound-alikes. It's incredible.
They definitely sound
alike. There's not much look-alike.
I don't know about I don't think he's going to wear one of those Hawaiian shirts, but other than that.
I bet he could.
I
bet he could.
But I don't think he would. Yeah, I think he's a smart man. He might have really focused on his studies when he was at Texas Tech.
Actually, pretty smart dude.
So there you go.
Pretty smart
so
dude.
So then it's all on you. I was going to say, now it's all on you.
Not pretty smart dude.
Gee, speaking of not smart dudes that are friends of the show, OU Mike is on hold, and he is always full of vim and vigor. OU Mike, what's up? Hello, Mike.
I resemble that remark.
Yes, you do, sir. What's going on? I believe you're calling because Barry's out, so therefore you think you get a hall pass.
Yeah, I get to be really vulgar this time around, so.
Okay, let us
have I believe that the umpire and the security guard are just glad that this happened in Houston and not in Istanbul. And I believe that they're glad they stayed at the Holiday Inn Express instead of the Saudi consulate.
That's it, huh?
Nick, please tell me that we got the
laser. I told you it would always circle back. It would always circle back to a not so good call.
Way before that. Oh,
it's unfortunate Barry wasn't here to smother.
Barry would have had a day with that one.
Yeah.
Because that was a complete and utter fail. you'll get used to it.
Okay.
And now he'll probably text as well. OU Mike, I'm watching the text line. Don't try and slide one by. It's not going to work. So we got that out of the way. For the most part, we can get back to the Astros. We'll continue to talk about it unless you guys want to get in on it.
I still got a couple things from that game
ahead.
Just like, oh, man, we can get into them a little bit later. But just the bunt, you know, some of the decisions by Hinge. You
talking about the bunt by Maldonado?
That was awful.
Yeah, and first of all, it's a lost art in baseball, the art of being able to bunt. But that was awful.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
We can talk about all that a little bit later, though.
Okay. So we're going to continue to roll on here from Carbach. And, of course, we'd love to have you join the show. As part of that, we're also going to be doing some giveaways to kind of give back to you guys that are our loyal listeners of the show. With that being said, I don't know if you guys have heard about this or not, but Fred Fowler, our very own from the Blitz, he's going to be front and center for the first annual Houston Sports Pub Crawl that's going on tomorrow. And so we're going to give away two passes right now to that pub crawl. It's courtesy of Thrive Plus. It's tomorrow, as I said. They're starting at Dean's in downtown. Then they're going to go to nine venues like Shea McElroy's Irish Pub, the Cottonmouth, and more. The passes that you're going to get come with an exclusive Be Someone Pub Crawl t-shirt, wristband, cup, koozie, Thrive Plus samples, and $3 beers, drinks, and shots at all the participating bars. If you're listening all week long, you know Barry wants you to get Fred drunk. He hasn't had a drink in over a month, and now he's going to be drinking on a pub crawl. No better chance to get your shot in or shots at Fred. He will drink them, and then he will be even more entertaining. As Nick can verify, when he drinks, he definitely turns up the entertainment level by about 10, right, Nick?
All fun times, though. Very good times. When he's drinking, you're definitely going to have a good time with Fred Fowler.
Yeah,
for
the
sure.
Entertainment level is going to be ratcheted up. So with that being said, we're going to give away two tickets to the crawl. It's this Saturday. I'm sorry, I said tomorrow, but it's this Saturday because I keep thinking today's Friday. Saturday, the pub crawl, it's going to be happening downtown. You can get tickets if you don't win them. htxpubcrawls.com. htxpubcrawls.com, but in the meantime, we'll take caller 17 right now, 713-780-3776. Caller 17, you get two passes to crawl with Fred.
Get the VIP.
The VIP is a good experience.
You get the
right?
VIP, you get the extra drawstring bag, you get the VIP express lane, which I'm guessing gets you booze faster.
Quicker.
Which means you get drunk faster. Tickets to get you $3 drinks. It's going to be great.
It's good stuff.
Sweet
right
shirt.
There.
You can pick your color on your shirt. It's good stuff. I might even sneak out there.
The shirt is a really good-looking shirt, by the way.
Yes.
It's the Be Someone overpass right there heading into downtown. Great-looking shirt, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So get on out there, and, you know, Fred's going to be there. I might even sneak out there for a few.
Nick, you should be there. You don't need VIP to get that kind of service, and I'm not sure you need to get the alcohol that fast, but you should be there. I just think that.
I might go.
That's a no.
No, with Nicky sneaky like that.
No, I really might go. So I just don't know yet.
Yeah, he sets it up kind of slyly so that people leave him alone, and then last minute, he'll be there.
I wonder what the last thing Nick got real excited about was.
Ooh, boy. Nick, I can't answer that on the air.
I love coming to work. I really do. I got to up the energy a little bit. That's just my nature. I can't help it.
Yeah, I yeah.
Joel tells me about it all the time, believe me.
No, I do not. I'm just saying, there are certain things we can't put on the radio that I know for a fact that there are things that fire you up in a very good way. So I'm not just going to leave that, right? All right, so last night, Nick, you're at the Rockets game. Is the Astros on the minds of people in the first half? Because it definitely was on the Rockets' minds because they basically started to crap the bed in the first half, and then they completely spread it around the sheets, decided to roll the comforter in it, and just roll around and fall asleep in it in the second half.
Yeah, it was just bad defense, and the second half was, you thought they would turn it around. I felt like they were going to be able to bring it within single digits, but when the third quarter started to progress, you really started to realize that they know they're not going to win this game, and they're not even going to come close. Defense was bad. Carmelo didn't look good. I mean, I guess he looked good a little bit at the beginning.
Because he made, a couple shots early?
Yeah, and then he just really, I mean, like I said, D'Antoni blamed Melo's performance on fatigue as well, but he looked good at the beginning, and then he just really kind of tapered off in the second half. So
that's a coach covering for a guy that he's already should have learned his lesson about covering for him and thinking that Melo will have his back too. I understand, Nick, the best point you made, though, it's only one game. They do have a tendency to start slow, so I'm not going to go overboard. Couple things, though. I warned you about the Pelicans. I said they're a good team. They are a really talented team that's deeper than a year ago. They used the money from Boogie Cousins to get some more help than depth in terms of their rotation. Anthony Davis wants to make a statement heading towards his contract year that he is MVP of this league, and he did nothing to make people think otherwise after game one.
You know what they feel like to me? And I could write off last night as just like they're a really bad matchup for the Rockets. Just the size that they have, mm-hmm. the athleticism that they have, they're just a really bad matchup. So I could write that off. But they look to me like the much improved ultimate version of those old Howard Magic teams. They've built everything around Davis. They got a bunch of dudes that just support him. And when he's – You know, he had 8 assists last night. When he's bottled up, he's kicking it out to guys. They're making shots. You know, Miritich, when teammates aren't punching him in the face, apparently very good.
Exactly. But again, the other thing is, don't sleep on guys that have an axe to grind and something to prove, because you take an Elfrid Payton with a triple-double that no one wanted. He was forgotten about after a lottery pick, and he gets a triple-double. And Julius Randle looked like a totally different player.
This whole team, that whole Pelicans team is axe to grind dudes outside of Anthony Davis. Like, it really is.
Holiday.
Yeah, the whole squad is axe to grind dudes. And then, you know, the Rockets, the defense, like, look, we knew the defense wasn't going to be as good. Like, and that's not going to be a shock to anybody. But they just looked lost on some of this stuff. Like, you had guys cutting to the basket, free, wide open, double teams that didn't make any sense. Like, some of the stuff I'm just like.
I hate to say I told you so, but what I've been telling people all along is they can outscore everybody. They have to be able to defend everybody, and they showed last night their defense isn't even close to what it was with Jeff Bezdelic.
Jeff Bezdelic, who was the guy in charge of defense for the roster or for the Rockets, and he just, I mean, be honest with me, mysteriously retires.
No, I've said it on the air already.
You know, weeks,
I've said my piece on it.
Weeks before, mysteriously retires. And, like, look, I know they felt good about some of the assistants, to, you know, that take over his role and stuff like that. But that guy who's that good and had them play that well in defense, and then you take him away, you take away some of the guys who played defense really well on this team, and you're going to see stuff like this. Let me see if I got this right. Most points they gave up since 2 seasons ago? Yeah, that's not good.
Here's the thing, people. I've warned you about this. To Cody's point, I told you Bezdelic didn't retire because he was tired and exhausted with the NBA season. He wouldn't have gone on the Bahamas joyride for a week for the bonding trip with the team if he didn't think he was coming back for another year. But when he came back from the Bahamas and he realized it's the same old Carmelo that got me fired in Denver, then basically, I think I don't need any more of this, and I'm not getting paid the money D'Antoni is to make sure that I say the right things publicly. So we can talk about all that. Nick was at the game. He'll give us his thoughts as well. But lots of things to talk about, including that Melo thing, because basically it's only one game again, but Carmelo Anthony is going to make it all about Carmelo Anthony. And in the post game where Nick was in the locker room, Carmelo Anthony was talking about, shockingly, Carmelo Anthony and his bench role and the adjustments he has to make and how taxing it is mentally and all the things that takes away from everything else on this team. We got one in the books. We got 2 to go, 2 hours more of the show, so plenty more time to talk. Join us, won't you? 713-780-3776, where you can call and text, or I'll hit up on Twitter. Hit us up on Twitter. Cody Stutes in for Barry Laminack. Nick back at the studio. Back with hour number 2. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.